Hello, welcome to the Chess Boxing Podcast. This week we've got the second part of an interview with commentators Matt Lunn and Chris the General Levy. Enjoy.
We talked about Roger and his performance, and I'm sure we'll get onto that in a minute. For myself, I thought it was one of the best chess boxing performances I've seen in terms of him getting the absolute most out of his abilities. Roger's now the British middleweight champion, so he might even be, with a bit of training, be good enough to face up against Andre Glemser. What are your thoughts on that, Matt, from a chess point of view?
From a chess point of view, a lot of admiration for Roger. I mean, as a chess player, as a boxer, and as a guy, I mean, like, he's hugely, hugely intelligent. He's very, very motivated. I think his attitude to kind of learning and training in both disciplines, and I defer to Chris a bit on the boxing side, is extremely commendable. I think he's a very solid chess player. I think he's the kind of, against Andre Glemser, I think if he prepped the right sort of stuff, then he might be with a shot. I mean, Andre, all I really know about him is that he's got a FIDE rating of about 2000, which is very, very decent and really good. And watching him play Blitz against David Jarmany, clearly like a staggeringly aggressive, very kind of trappy player. And I imagine someone who would actually be quite difficult to prep against. So I think Andre would certainly be the favourite in the chess, but I have a lot of faith in Roger's ability to put the hard yards in to, as you kind of alluded earlier, get the most out of his potential in that fight. So, yeah, Andre, for me, would be the favourite on the chess from what I've seen, but that's not to say that with the right kind of work, Roger wouldn't be in with a shot.
Just a little wind into his kind of attitude. He tries to get every advantage, and obviously before the event we draw who gets black and white. And he, you know, he's pestering me to find out if he got black and white, because to him, any kind of advantage he can get is to his benefit. Even to the extent of, you know, trying to get inside his opponent's head. Obviously doing a lot, he does a lot of research. We switched, unfortunately he was going to fight Matt, so he'd done a lot of research for Matt, but no doubt he did a lot of research for Cheyenne, and actually his attention to detail is incredible, and I think he's got a real winner's attitude, and I think that came across on both the chess and the boxing. But Chris, perhaps you talk about the boxing, because I certainly didn't think it was as one-sided as Dan was portraying it in the last podcast.
I mean, I'd certainly echo what you were saying about the kind of dedication that Roger shows. It's the marginal gains approach to both. He'll seek every advantage everywhere. He's like the Dave Brailsford of chess boxing for any cycling aficionados out there. But, I mean, on the boxing, it's the dedication that he's put in. I mean, I remember, I'm very much an occasional participant at training these days. I remember, it's been only about a year and a half ago, I first saw him in the gym, and the shape that he's in now. I mean, he was extremely lean. There wasn't an ounce on him. And the boxing was very, very level. So in Cheyenne, he was facing an experienced competitor, you know, somebody who's got a bit of a martial arts past. So while Cheyenne was definitely on top in the boxing, you could tell that he was the one who was, you know, kind of pressing things a little bit more there, if not on the board. Although we should talk about Cheyenne's chess actually after this, which was so remarkably strong. But Roger was holding his own on the boxing. So again, this is a bit like the first fight of the night, where you would have thought that it would have been very much one person specializing in one, the other in different disciplines. But actually, they both sort of raised their game to compete with each other on close to an even level. And, you know, I'd love to hear what Matt has to say about the chess as well, because I thought, for me, how Cheyenne played, even though I ended up losing, if I remember correctly, on the chess on the time, the kind of controlled positional game that he played was, for me, the most impressive chess performance the entire evening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I thought it was a really, really interesting chess game. I mean, you obviously, like, David Jarmany played a characteristically good game with a couple of kind of funny moments by both sides, and Brian Mack played a really good game as well. But I think, I mean, what was really impressive about Roger's chess was that it kind of, he had an opportunity in the opening as the black side of an advanced Caro Kann with 3c5 to stop White from castling. It was a momentary thing. There were a couple of different ways of doing it, but then Cheyenne did castle because Roger went down a different path, and he just had this position where White had a very pleasant advantage, kind of a bit like Dan's game against Brian. It was sort of difficult to find ways of improving your position without, but he played a couple of just really, really sensible moves, like moving his rook to the seventh to kind of cover some slightly drafty squares. He kind of shuffled around, he kept his position flexible, and in the end he made this pawn break f6, which Chris and I had some arguments, some really quite sort of challenging arguments on the show itself about the merits of, but he found a way to make the position complicated. He took a risk and it paid off. And I think it's that kind of savviness that's really needed in order to prevail in a sport like chess boxing, because Cheyenne did, he had the better position and he was ahead for most of the game, but Roger kind of probed at the few weaknesses he could find, and ultimately, that was what won it for him. Cheyenne got into serious time trouble. And actually, in the end, Cheyenne blundered ahead of the final position, which Roger wasn't worse in, as I recall. I think it was very double-edged, but Roger was back in the game at that point. But the time advantage, as Terry kept saying, is so important in this. And yeah, I think Roger deserves a lot of credit for his chess in that game. I thought it was a very measured effort, given what a difficult position it was.
Set things up intriguingly at that weight as well. So now you've got the question as to, you know, is Roger going to step up to the regional scene and challenge Andre? Or, you know, Dan seems to be perhaps starting to call him out as, well. Dan, I think, wants his piece of the mix too, certainly for the British title, and then perhaps even to move on after that. So he's going to win, in a way, I think, the Dillian White of chess boxing, who's there. And, you know, he wants his chance to muscle into the big time. And then Cheyenne, you know, hugely impressive on the chess, got his fighting background. And if we're talking about entrances as well, I mean, I don't know about you, Matt, but I didn't know where to look during Cheyenne's entrance. So I kind of felt like I just had to avert my eyes. It was quite something.
Yeah, certainly not something one would forget in a hurry, is it? And I think you're talking about the spectacle of chess boxing in terms of the kind of heel face model that WWE has in relation to Dan Mayfield embracing his anti-hero side. I thought that was what was really enjoyable about Cheyenne. It was this kind of like cultivating this ultra arrogant king-like persona. I felt was really, really enjoyable against, you know, this kind of this PhD student on the other hand. And I thought that the actual kind of optics were fantastic from that perspective as well. So great credit to Cheyenne. And his chess was seriously good. I get the impression that he's a very talented player who would benefit from playing a bit more competitively. I think in both his game against Matt Reed at the previous event and against Roger, he got a very, very nice position and then kind of struggled to find the right plan. And obviously, like, any game that ends with you losing on time suggests potentially something that experience can iron out. So no, I think Cheyenne's definitely a big contender for the future, and I'm sure he's going to be winning bouts very, very soon.
Yeah, Sean's actually got a little bit of athletic ability. Gymnastic ability, which he hasn't brought out yet. But we're going to try and work on something for some of his next ring entrances. And he's certainly got a persona to build on. I actually didn't have a lot of communication with Roger before the event in terms of his entrance. And he wasn't he didn't come to our workshop, unfortunately, he couldn't make it. But there's very few things or moments in one's life that can't be improved by wearing a cape. And I think Roger really really showed that to be the case. He looked absolutely brilliant coming in. Also, you know, he's got Irish heritage and such an amazing mop of hair. He really lent into his entrance on the evening itself. And you're talking about Dan Mayfield and Roger, and obviously they fought. But I think Dan often says, you know, I won the boxing. But actually, if you look at Roger's fight, it was strategy across both disciplines, not just in the chess game and not just in the boxing match. It was knowing that he had a time advantage, knowing that all he needed to do in the boxing was to stay safe and move and throw back now and again and conserve his energy so he didn't make any blunders in the chess. And actually, I think it was a truly whole performance. And he was up against a very, very good chess boxer. And I think, or against any other opponent, I'm sure Cheyenne would have won that. But he was, you know, Cheyenne was winning in terms of his position. But Roger knew that, and he knew how much time he had, and he played for that win on time. So you've really got to take your hat off to Roger, I think.
And that controversial moment that Matt alluded to, when he kind of hung in there, Roger, and then kind of played this move that was objectively probably not the strongest, but in the situation where your opponent's clock is ticking down, just to suddenly mess the position up deliberately like that, even if it may well not be the worst, was a very cunning bit of psychology. But I mean, for sure, forget the twitcherasu. You know, the biggest danger of fisticuffs, I think, on the night was, yeah, me and Matt just discussing that move. I mean, we could have gone on and did go on well after the end of the broadcast, debating back and forth the merits of that particular F6 move. I still don't think we've reached a conclusion.
All I know is that I'm absolutely furious still, just thinking back on it. just unstoppable rage at the prospects of... I'm one round to your way of thinking, Chris. So there are lots of different variations to analyse there. But fundamentally, it changed the nature of the position in a way that wasn't comfortable for Cheyenne, and that was demonstrated by the fact that he blundered shortly after. And it wasn't a game-ending blunder, but suddenly, as I say, in chess, both sides were playing for three results as opposed to the two. I mean, like, purely from a chess perspective, Cheyenne wasn't going to lose unless he lost on time. But F6 discombobulated things enough that Roger managed to... And actually, sorry, lest my ramble kind of go completely off-piste. I just thought the other thing with that, Roger played F6, and then a couple of moves later, he generated this attack against the weak F4 pawn, and it took Cheyenne a whole minute to come up with the right idea, which was the Queen G3, I think, and it was the best move. But by that point, Roger had over doubled the amount of time left, and that was just, it was kind of crippling in that respect, which is really, really interesting. So frequently we play these blitz games with increments, and when you don't have it, that kind of time loss is so very difficult to come back from unless your opponent is completely out of it, and Roger wasn't. So no, great game, fair play to both sides, and enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah, after all the chopping and changing and you know, obviously we had several people were unable to fight because of the coronavirus, as a headline, I thought it really lived up to the billing. It was a fantastic way to end the show. Really, really great stuff. We also need to talk about crowd favourite, John the Brick, who was up against Riley, and then another debutant. So Gerard was supposed to fight Aaron Sweeney, who unfortunately had a bereavement, so send our best to Aaron. And John the Brick's stepped in with 2 or 3 weeks notice. So we must bear that in mind, and thank you for doing that. I thought, I spent a lot of time with John, and we've actually had him on the podcast a couple of episodes ago. And I think he had a plan, and his plan was to play the hippo, basically, the orangutan. And for some reason, he just didn't follow the plan. And it was rather catastrophic, Chris, do you think, in terms of his initial chess round?
I've seen John play chess before, and he's a good player. So I know he can play a little bit better than that, but it's a slightly unfortunate opening setup that he basically entombed his own white squared bishop and reduced it to, you know, what chess players would call a big pawn. It had nowhere to go at all, on top of which it then weakened the squares around his king and exposed it to essentially being chased around from a very early stage. So that really meant that the chess was decided in the first round. And then Gerard, you know, I think he did a very gentlemanly thing there. So a couple of people who I was talking to in the bar afterwards, they were saying, you know, was it fair what he was doing? Like he essentially strung the chess out a bit. He had a knockout blow there. In the boxing analogy, John was there tottering around, ready for the final big right, just to knock him out there and then. But rather than do that, he kind of kept the right hand sheathed and let the clock tick down and let John have the boxing round, which I think is the least that he deserved, having stepped in at quite short notice. And also because John, I'm so impressed by John's boxing ability, regardless of his age. I mean, it's phenomenal that he's well into his 50s and fighting. But the level of technique that he shows, to me, he's one of the more... I told you how much I enjoyed Dan's aggressive approach. Equally, the kind of classical boxing of John. He loves the kind of... He's like side-on, likes to use the jab. He's a very assiduous trainer. So I think it was very good that he had the chance to show those skills as well. Matt, how did you find that fight?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of John Wood as a man, and again, he's just very, very inspirational. And I think he's in his 60s, or he's sort of 61, 62. He's more physically fit than I am, which is extremely humbling. And yes, he does generally play chess to a much higher standard. I alluded to it earlier as not being a very high caliber fight, and that wasn't a very fair turn of phrase. But I suppose what we don't like to see is for the chess to be decided in the first round, and it does occasionally happen. Sometimes if people experiment with a new opening and it goes slightly wrong, and I think it's in the hippo, basically the only pawn you shouldn't really be moving is the f pawn, because it weakens your king so much. And John's dark squares were unfortunately just unsalvageable after about sort of eight or nine moves. And yeah, it's one of those things that with a bit more time and experience, he'll iron out those that kind of element of his game, play a lot more solidly, find openings that work for him, and then we'll get more of an opportunity to see all of his kind of great attributes in the boxing ring come to the fore. So yeah, it was a quite a quick fight, one that wasn't testament to what John brings to the sport, because I think he's a fantastic figure for us to have in the game. And hopefully at the next one, with a bit more training in the chess and maintaining his high boxing standard, then he'll bounce back from that defeat.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. And John always likes to entertain in the boxing as well. He was doing a bit of rope-a-doping, and he was against a much younger guy. Gerard, he's a good boxer, which I think he showed. And I'm very hopeful that we might get Aaron back in the ring with Gerard. We obviously, they're both from the same gym, and I've seen the spar quite a few times. They're very well matched. It's particularly interesting because Gerard is a southpaw. So there's a really interesting dynamic there between the two fighters, who are so well matched in terms of weight and ability, and also on the chess as well. They're both very good chess players. So I'll definitely be trying to get them both back into the chess boxing arena at some future date. All right, guys, is there anything else you'd like to add? We've sort of run over a little bit, but not a problem at all. Anyone like to say hello to? Any further comments on the show or any bits and pieces? You want to continue your argument about that particular poor move or anything like that? Go ahead.
I wanted to just kind of provide some context that it's amazing that we had this event with 400 people. And it was the Saturday before, basically, the unofficial lockdown started, the week before it became more or less official, because this was Saturday the 14th, wasn't it? By Tuesday the 17th, we were all working from home, basically, in my office. And that was 3 weeks ago. So I think we were supremely lucky that we were able to have the event at all. And I'm really glad that it was such a joyous and entertaining occasion, because, it's been great reflecting on it with you guys, and just thinking there's another world where unfortunately it would have had to be postponed.
Yeah, we did have, I mean, it happened so quickly, didn't it? We had Matt Reed developed a cough on the morning. We had Gerard pulled out on the day. We had Andre who had flu that week. And, you know, thank you so much as well to Team Medic, our medics who were advising us on obviously the COVID outbreak, not just, you know, the boxing and keeping safe in the boxing. And thanks again to CavSoc who did the live stream, and, you know, they turned up and did that. Thanks to, unfortunately, Protocol Sports Marketing, we're going to fly over for the event, but they couldn't because of restrictions. But thanks to our fans who turned up. I was really quite buoyed by the fact the venue was almost full, you know, despite what was going on. And we were very lucky, really. I felt like we were the sort of last chopper outside on. And I think perhaps people didn't realise how serious it was at that point. And obviously now there's a completely different aspect on everything to do with Corona. Virus. What about you, Chris? Any parting words?
I know. I mean, it was a highly enjoyable event. Certainly, from quality of the fights, it was, as we've been discussing, it's really some excellent bouts there, some fascinating debutants, some intriguing divisions to look to in the future. And you know, there's more important things than chess boxing in the world right now. But when things start to return to normal, I think the support's looking in great shape. I love the dedication to keeping the training going. The online training that we were talking about earlier in your Norfolk Country Pile, I think, is certainly going to keep fighters in good shape, and I might even be tempted to join in next time as well. So as when things return to normal, I'm really looking forward to the next event.
Okay, well, all that's left for me to say is just thank you both for not just coming on the podcast, but all your time and effort you put in with what is excellent commentary. And I always get comments from both people attending the show and also online. The commentary is always one of the big highlights and why people love the sport. Thanks very much, Chris.
Pleasure.
And thanks very much, Matt.
Thanks, guys. Great, as always, to talk to you both.